వక్రతుండ మహాకాయ సూర్యకోటి సమప్రభ నిర్విఘ్నం కురు మే దేవ సర్వకార్యషు సర్వదా శివశక్త్యాయుక్తో యది భవతి శక్తః ప్రభవితుం న చేదేవం దేవో న ఖలు కుశలః స్పందితుమపి అత స్వామారాధ్యా హరిహర విరించాదిభిరపి ప్రణంతుం స్తోతుం వా కతమకృత పుణ్యః ప్రభవతి.
Shri Sai Ram. At the outset, my most loving and prayerful salutations at the divine lotus feet of our most beloved Bhagwan, Shri Satya Sai Baba. Dear listener, you are tuned to Radio Sai Global Harmony on Asia Stream, bringing you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, the love and the message of Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba. Good morning. Greetings and loving Sai Ram on this Thursday on the 9th of July 2020, and with me Team Radio Sai Sunil once again welcoming you to this morning segment Divine Glory on Thursday Live, coming to you from the studios of Sri Satya Sai Media Center here at Prashanthi Nilayam. Let me at first read out to you today's Sai Inspires message. What should we do to truly practice the principle of universal love? Bhagwan lovingly reminds us today, and I quote, Adveshta sarvabhutanam, bear no ill will against any living being. Sarvabhuta hite rataha, always engage in promoting the well-being of all beings. Sama shaktraucha mitrecha. Consider foe and friend alike. Jewels like these contained in the Gita are, as known to all, pointers to the need for universal love. By declaring that man shall not bear ill will towards the entire world of living beings, the Gita is positing a lesson with invaluable inner meaning that in all beings and even in all things, there is a moving, revolving and active illuminating principle which is the divine, appropriately called as Atma. It is a wrong against God, this omnipresent divine, to hate living beings, to injure them. That is to say, it is as bad as hating and injuring oneself. The reason being that the injurer is as much a living being with God as his core, as the injured. Unquote. This was taken from Divine Discourse, delivered by Bhagwan on July 29th, 1969. Dear listener, today as the world is still continuing with lockdowns and social distancing due to the spread of the coronavirus disease or the COVID-19, let us all take all the precautions mandated by the government and the health department and also maintain personal and community hygiene. And also let us continue to engage in prayers at our own places for world peace. Let me now play for you the Krimi Mantra, or a verse from the Krishna Yajurveda Taittiriya Aranyaka. And as some of you might know, the efficacy of this mantra is in destroying all the harmful germs and viruses. And for your information, this mantra is chanted daily in the morning and in the evening during the Mandir prayer sessions here at Prashanthi Nilayam. And for those of you who don't know, let me also tell you that these prayer sessions are streamed live for all to listen on Radio Sai's Prashanthi Mandir Live YouTube channel, Sri Satya Sai Baba Facebook page, and of course Radio Sai's Asia stream and Telugu stream, both in the morning at 8 a.m. and in the evening at 5 p.m. So you could log on at these times. Now, for the benefit of our listeners, let me play for you the mantra if you have missed this.
Om Atrinatva Krime Hanmi Kanvena Jamadagnina Vishvavaso Brahmana Hataha Krimina Gumraja Apyesha Vristapatir Hataha Atho mata atho pita atho sthura atho kshudra atho krishna atho shveta atho ashatika hata shveta bhissaha sarve hata ahara vadya shrutasya havisho yatha tat satyam Yadamuyamasya jambhayo adadhamita dahitate khantanrasi Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Dear listener, that was the Krimi Mantra from the Krishna Yajurveda Taittiriya Aranyaka. And the efficacy of this mantra is in destroying all the harmful germs and viruses. The time right now in our studios is 51 minutes past 9 a.m. that is Indian Standard Time. And today in Divine Glory, I've lined up for you readings from the English version of the holy book, Sri Sai Satcharitra by Sri Hemant Pant, followed by the first part of a Tryst with Divinity conversation with Dr. V. Mohan, an eminent diabetologist and also presently the trustee of the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust. This conversation is taken from our archives. But first, readings from Sri Sai Satcharitra. Sri Sai Satcharitra is an account on the life and teachings of Sai Baba of Shirdi, written by Sri Hemant Pant. We're thankful to Vasanthi Sundaram for reading out the contents from this holy book, and to Veeramani Kannan for the melodious musical support. Wishing you all a happy, holy and blessed Thursday and a wonderful day ahead. Also praying to Lord Almighty that the pandemic caused by the coronavirus disease be eradicated and all the suffering come to an end at the earliest. Samasta lokaha sukhino bhavantu.
Construction of the Samadhi Mandir. Baba has never made any fuss about the things which he wanted to accomplish, but he so skillfully arranged the circumstances that the people were surprised at the slow but sure results attained. The construction of the Samadhi Mandir is an instance. Sriman Bapu Saheb Bhuti, the famous multi-millionaire of Nagpur, lived in Shirdi with his family. Once, an idea arose in his mind that he should have a building of his own there. Sometimes after this, while he was sleeping in the Dixit Vada, he got a vision. Baba appeared in his dream and ordered him to build a Vada with a temple. Shama, who was sleeping there, also got a similar vision. When Bapu Saheb awakened, he saw Shama crying and asked the latter as to why he was in tears. The latter replied that in his vision, Baba came to him and ordered distinctly, build the Vada with the temple. I shall fulfill the desires of all. On hearing the sweet and loving words of Baba, I was overpowered with emotion. My throat was choked, my eyes were overflowing with tears, and I began to cry. Bapu Sahib was surprised to see that both their visions tallied. Being a rich and capable man, he decided to build a wada there and drew up a plan with Shama. Kaka Sahib Dikshit also approved of it. And when it was placed before Baba, he also sanctioned it immediately. Then the construction work was duly started, and under the supervision of Shama, the ground floor, the cellar and the well were completed. Baba, on his way to and from the Lendi, also suggested some improvements. Further work was entrusted to Bapu Sahib Joe, and when it was going on, an idea struck Bapu Sahib Bhuti's mind that there should be an open space of platform, and in the center, the image of Muralidhar should be installed. He asked Shama to refer this matter to Baba and get his consent. The latter asked Baba about this when he was just passing by the wada. On hearing Shama, Baba gave his consent, saying, "After the temple is complete, I will come there to stay." And staring at the wada, he added, "After the wada is complete, we shall use it. We shall live, move and play there, embrace each other and be happy." Then Shama asked Baba whether this was the auspicious time to begin the foundation work of the central room of the shrine. The latter answered in the affirmative. Then Shama got a coconut broken there and started the work. In due time, the work was completed and an order was also placed for making a good image of Muralidhar. But before it was ready, a new situation turned up. Baba became seriously ill. Bapu Sahib became very sad and dejected, thinking that if Baba passed away, his wada would not be consecrated by the holy touch of Baba's feet, and all his money, about 1 lakh rupees, would be wasted away. But the words, "Keep me in the wada," which came out of Baba's mouth just before his passing away, consoled not only Bapu Sahib, but one and all. In due time, Baba's holy body was placed and preserved in the central shrine meant for Muralidhar. And Baba himself became Muralidhar, and the wada thus became the Samadhi Mandir of Sai Baba. His wonderful leela is unfathomable. Blessed and fortunate is Bapu Sahib Bhuti, in whose wada lies the holy and the pure body of Baba. Bow to Sri Sai. Peace be to all. Chapter 40. Stories of Baba. Attending Mrs. Dev's Udyapan ceremony as a sannyasi with two others, visiting Hemad Pant's house in the form of his picture. In this chapter, we give two stories: how Baba attended the Udyapan ceremony organized by Mr. B.B. Dev's mother at his house at Dahanu, and second, how Baba attended the Shimga dinner party in Hemad Pant's house at Bandra. Preliminary. Blessed is Sri Sai Samarth, who gives instructions in both temporal and spiritual matters to his devotees and makes them happy by enabling them to achieve the goal of their life. Sai, when places his hands on their heads, transfers his power to them, and thus destroying the sense of differentiation, makes him attain the unattainable thing. He who embraces the bhaktas, who prostrate themselves before him with no sense of duality or differentiation, he becomes one with the bhaktas, as the sea with the rivers. Now, to revert to the stories of this chapter. Mrs. Dev's Udyapan ceremony. Mr. B.V. Dev was a mamlatdar at Dahanu in Thana district. His mother had observed 25 or 30 religious vows, and an Udyapan ceremony in connection therewith was to be performed. The ceremony included the feeding of 100 or 200 Brahmins. Mr. Dev fixed a date for the ceremony and wrote a letter to Bapu Sahib Jog, asking him to request Sai Baba on his behalf to attend the dinner of the ceremony as without his presence it would be incomplete. Bapu Sahib Jog read out the letter to Baba. Baba noted carefully the pure-hearted invitation and said, "I always think of him who remembers me. I require no conveyance, carriage, tonga, train or aeroplane. I manifest myself to him who lovingly calls me. Write to him a reply that three of us, myself, yourself and a third person will go and attend it." Mr. Jog informed Mr. Dev of what Baba said. The latter was much pleased, but he knew that Baba never went to any place except Rahata, Rui and Nimgaon in person. He also thought that nothing was impossible for Baba as he was all-pervading and that he might suddenly come in any form and fulfill his words. A few days before this, a sannyasi in Bengali dress and professing to work for the cause of the protection of the cows came to the station master at Dahanu to collect donations. The latter told him to go into the town and see the Mamlatdar, Mr. Dev, and with his help collect funds. Just then, the Mamlatdar happened to come there. The station master then introduced a sannyasi to him. Both sat talking on the platform. Mr. Dev told him that a subscription list for some other charitable cause had already been prepared by the leading citizen, Rao Saheb Narottam Shetty, and so it was not proper to start another subscription list, and that it would be better if he would visit the place after 2 or 4 months. Hearing this, the sannyasi left the place. About a month later, the sannyasi came in a tonga, which stopped in front of Mr. Dev's house at about 10 in the morning. Dev thought that he had come for donations. On seeing him busy with the preparations of the ceremony, the sannyasi said he had not come for money, but for meals. Dev said, "All right, you're welcome in the house." The sannyasi said, "Two lads are with me." Dev said, "Well, come with them." As there was about 2 hours for the meals to be served, Dev inquired where he should send for them. He said it was not necessary as he would come himself at the appointed time. Dev asked him to come at noon. Exactly at 12 o'clock, the trio came, joined the party, and after feeding themselves, went away. After the ceremony was finished, Dev wrote a letter to Bapu Sahib Jog complaining of Baba's breach of promise. Jog went to Baba with the letter, but before it was opened, Baba spoke. "Ah, he says that I promised him to come but deceived him. Tell him that I did attend the dinner with 2 others, but he failed to recognize me. Then why did he call me at all? He thought that the sannyasi came to ask for subscription money. Did I not remove his doubt in that respect? And did I not say that I would come with 2 others? And did not the trio come in time and have their meals? See, to keep my words, I would sacrifice my life. I would never be untrue to my words." This reply pleased Jog's heart, and he communicated the whole reply to Dev. As soon as he read it, he burst into tears of joy, but he took himself to task mentally for vainly blaming Baba. He wondered how he was deceived by the sannyasi's prior visit and his coming to him for subscriptions, how he also failed to catch the significance of the sannyasi's words that he would come with 2 others for meals. This story clearly shows that when the devotees surrender themselves completely to their Sadguru, he sees to it that the religious functions in their houses are duly executed and complied with all the necessary formalities. Hemad Pant's Shimga Dining. Now, let us take another story which shows how Baba appeared in the form of his picture and fulfilled the desire of his devotee. In 1917, in the morning of the full moon day, Hemad Pant had a vision. Baba appeared to him in his dream in the form of a well-dressed sannyasi, woke him up and said that he would come to him for meals that day. The vision constituted a part of the dream. When he fully woke up, he saw neither Sai nor any other sannyasi. But when he began to recollect the dream, he remembered each and every word the sannyasi uttered in his dream. Though he was in contact with Baba for 7 years and always meditated on Baba, he never expected that Baba would come to his house for meals. However, being much pleased with Baba's words, he went to his wife and informed her that being the holy day, a sannyasi was coming for meals and that some more rice should be prepared. She inquired about the guest, who he was and where he was coming from. Then, not to cause any misunderstanding, he gave her the truth and told her about the dream. She doubtingly asked whether it was possible that Baba should come there from Shirdi, leaving the dainty dishes there for accepting their coarse food. Hemat Pant then assured her that Baba might not come in person, but he might attend in the form of a guest, and that they would lose nothing if they cooked some more rice. After this, the preparations for the dining went on, and it was ready at noon. The Holika worship was through, and the leaves were spread and arranged with rangoli around them. 2 rows were arranged with a central seat between them for the honorable guest. All the members of the family, sons, grandsons, daughters and son-in-law, came and occupied their seats, and the serving of the various items commenced. While this was being done, everybody was waiting for the guest, but none turned up, although it was past noon. Then the entrance was closed. The annashuddhi or ghee was served. This was a signal to start eating. Formal offering to the Vaishvadeva of fire and Naivedya to Sri Krishna were also over, and the members were about to begin when footsteps in the staircase were heard distinctly. Hemat Pant went immediately and opened the door and saw 2 men there, Ali Muhammad and Maulana Ismu Mujawar. These 2 persons, seeing that meals were laid out and all the members were about to begin eating, apologized to Hemat Pant and requested him to excuse the interference. They said, "You left your seat and came running to us. Others are waiting for you. So please take this thing. I shall relate all about it later at your convenience." Saying so, he took out from under his arm a packet wrapped in an old newspaper and placed it on the table. Hemat Pant uncovered the packet and saw, to his great wonder and pleasant surprise, a big and nice picture of Sai Baba. On seeing it, he was much moved. Tears ran down from his eyes and hair stood on end all over his body. And he bent and placed his head on the feet of Baba in the picture. He thought that Baba had blessed him by this miracle. Out of curiosity, he asked Ali Muhammad how he got this picture. Ali Muhammad said he bought it from a shop and that he would give all the details about it later and wished that all the members were waiting for him, he should go and join them. Hemat Pant thanked him, bade him goodbye and returned to the dining hall. The picture was placed on the central seat reserved for the guest, and after making the due offering of the Naivedya, the whole party commenced eating and finished it in proper time. On seeing the beautiful form of Sai in the picture, everybody was extremely pleased and wondered how all this happened. This is how Sai Baba fulfilled his words uttered by him in the dream of Hemat Pant. The story of the picture with all its details, namely how Ali Muhammad got it, why he bought it and gave it to Hemat Pant, is reserved for the next chapter. Bow to Sri Sai. Peace be to all. Chapter 41. Story of the picture, stealing the rags and reading of Dhyaneshwari. As stated in the last chapter, we continue here the story of the picture. 9 years after the incident described in the last chapter, Ali Muhammad met Hemat Pant again and related to him the following story. One day, while wandering in the streets of Mumbai, he bought the picture from a street hawker. Then he got it framed and set it on a wall in his house at Bandra. As he loved Baba, daily he took darshan of it. 3 months before he gave the picture to Hemadpant, he was suffering from an abscess or swelling on his leg. An operation was performed and he was recovering in the house of his brother-in-law, Mr. Noor Muhammad Peerboy in Mumbai. For 3 months, his house in Bandra was closed and nobody was living there. Only the pictures of the Baba Abdul Rahman, Maulana Sahib Muhammad Hussain, Sai Baba, Baba Tajuddin and a few other saints who were living were there. The wheel of time did not even spare these. All the pictures met their fate, but how Sai Baba's picture escaped it, nobody has been able to explain to me till now. It shows the all-pervasiveness, omnipresence of Sai and his inscrutable power. The story goes like this. He had a small picture of Saint Baba Abdul Rahman from Muhammad Hussain Taryatopan many years ago. He gave it to his brother-in-law Noor Muhammad Peerboy and it was lying on the table for 8 years. Once, the latter took it to a photographer and got it enlarged to life size and distributed copies of the same amongst his relatives and friends, including Ali Muhammad, who fixed it up in his Bandra house. Noor Muhammad was a disciple of Saint Abdul Rahman, and when he went to present the picture to him in an open darbar held by him, the guru got wild and ran to beat him and drove him out. He felt sorry and dejected. He also thought that he spent so much of money and incurred his guru's displeasure and wrath. As his guru, Baba Abdul Rahman, did not like image worship, he took the enlarged picture of Baba Rahman with him to the Apollo Bandar and after hiring a boat, took it and drowned it in the sea. He requested the friends and relatives to return their copies and after giving them all back, he had them drowned in the Bandra Sea. At this time, Ali Muhammad was in his brother-in-law's house. He was told by him that his suffering would come to an end if he would soon drown the pictures of the other saints also in the sea. On hearing this, Ali Muhammad sent Mehta, his manager, to his Bandra house and got all the pictures of the saints in the house to be thrown into the sea. When Ali Muhammad returned home after 2 months, he was surprised to find Sai Baba's picture on the wall as before. He did not understand how Mehta took away all the pictures except this. He immediately took it out and kept it in his cupboard, fearing that if his brother-in-law saw it, he would do away with it. While he was thinking how it should be disposed of and who would keep it with care, Sai Baba himself, as it were, suggested to him that he should see and consult Maulana Ismu Mujawar and abide by his opinion. He met the Maulana and told him everything. After much consultation, they both decided that the picture should be presented to Anna Sahib or Hemadpant and that he would protect it well. Then they both went to Hemadpant and presented him the picture in the nick of time. This story shows how Baba knew all the past, present and future and how skillfully he pulled the wires and fulfilled desires of his devotees. The following story shows that Baba liked very much those who took real interest in spiritual matters and that he removed all their difficulties and made them happy. Stealing the rags and reading of Dhyaneshwari. Mr. B.V. Dev, who was Mamladar of the Hanu in Thana district, wished for a long time to read Dhyaneshwari, the well-known Marathi commentary on the Bhagavad Gita by Dhyaneshwar. He also wanted to read other scriptures. He could read daily one chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, but when he took Dhyaneshwari in hand, some difficulties cropped up and he was precluded from reading it. He took 3 months' leave, went to Shirdi and thence to his home at Paud for rest. He could read there other books, but when he opened Dhyaneshwari, some evil or stray thoughts came crowding up in his mind and stopped him in the effort. Try as much as he could, he was not able to read even a few lines of the book with ease. So he resolved in his mind that when Baba would create love for the book and would order him to read it, he would begin and not till then. Then in the month of February 1914, he went with his family to Shirdi. There, Jog asked him whether he reads Dhyaneshwari daily. Dev replied that he wanted to read it but was not successful, and that only when Baba would order him to read it, he would commence. Jog then advised him to take a copy of the book and present it to Baba and start the reading after it was consecrated and returned by him. Dev replied he did not want to resort to this device as Baba knows his heart. Would he not know his desire and satisfy it by giving him a clear order to read? Dev then saw Baba and offered him 1 rupee as dakshina. Baba asked for 20 rupees, which he gave. At night, he met one Balak Ram and inquired from him as to how he secured Baba's devotion and grace. Balak Ram told him he would communicate everything the next day after Aarti. When Dev went for darshan the next day, Baba asked again for 20 rupees, which he gave willingly. As the masjid was crowded, Dev went aside and sat in a corner. Baba asked him to come closer and sit with a calm mind, which Dev did. Then after the noon aarti was over and the men dispersed, Dev saw Balak Ram again and asked him his previous experiences, what Baba told him and how he was taught meditation. While Balak Ram was going to reply, Baba sent one Chandru, a leper devotee, to call Dev to him. When Dev went to Baba, the latter asked him with whom and what he was talking. He said he was of Balak Ram and heard from him his fame. Then Baba asked again for 25 rupees as dakshina, which Dev gave gladly. Baba took him inside and, sitting near the post, charged him, saying, "You stole away my rags without my knowledge." Dev denied any knowledge of the rags, but Baba asked him to make a search. He searched but found none. Then Baba got angry and said, "There is nobody here. You are the only thief, grey-haired and old. You came here for stealing." After this, Baba lost his temper, got terribly wild, gave all sorts of abuses and scoldings. Dev remained silent and apprehended that he might get a beating too. After about an hour or so, Baba asked him to go to the wada. He returned to the wada and told Jog and Balak Ram all that had happened. Then in the afternoon, Baba sent for all of them and said that his words might have pained the old man, Dev, but as he had committed the theft, he could not resist but take him to task. Then Baba asked again for 12 rupees. Dev collected the amount, paid it, and prostrated himself before Baba. Then Baba said to him, "Go on reading the Dhyaneshwari daily. Go and sit in the wada. Read regularly every day, and while reading, explain the portion read to all with love and devotion. I am sitting here ready to give you the whole gold embroidered shela. Then why go to others to steal rags? And why should you get into the habit of stealing?" Dev was much pleased to hear the words of Baba, for he directly asked him to start reading Dhyaneshwari. He thought that he got what he wanted and that he could read the book with ease. He again prostrated himself before Baba and said he surrendered himself to him and that he should be treated as a child and be helped in his reading. He realized then what Baba meant by stealing the rags. What he asked Balak Ram constituted the rags, and Baba did not like his behavior in this respect. As he was ready to answer all his questions, he did not like him to ask others and make unnecessary inquiries, and therefore he scolded him. They thought that he really did not scold him, but taught that he was ready to fulfill his desires and there was no use asking others in vain. Dev took these scoldings as blessings and went home satisfied and contented. The matter did not end there. Baba did not stop with only issuing an order to read. Within a year, he went to Dev and inquired about his progress. On 2nd April 1914, on Thursday morning, Baba gave him a dream. He sat on the upper floor and asked him whether he understood the Pothi. No, answered they. Baba said, then when are you going to understand? Dev burst into tears and said, unless you shower your grace, the reading is mere burden and the understanding is still more difficult. Baba said, while reading, you make haste. Read it before me in my presence. Dev asked, what shall I read? Baba said, read Adhyatma, spiritualism. Dev went in to bring the book. When he opened his eyes, he was fully awakened. We leave the readers to imagine what ineffable joy and bliss they felt after this vision. Bow to Sri Sai. Peace be to all.
Om Sai Baba, Sri Sai Baba, Jai Sai Baba, Shirdi Sai Baba. Om Sai Baba, Sri Sai Baba, Jai Sai Baba, Shirdi Sai Baba.
Sachidananda Guru, Brahmananda Guru, Nityananda Guru, Sai Ram.
Sachidananda Guru, Brahmananda Guru, Nityananda Guru, Sai Ram.
Narayanam Bajare Manasa,
Narayanam Bajare Manasa,
Siddheshwar Sai Baba, Paramatmane Sai Baba.
Om Sai Baba, Shri Sai Baba, Jai Sai Baba, Shirdi Sai Baba. Om Sai Baba, Shri Sai Baba, Jai Sai Baba, Shirdi Sai Baba.
Abhayapradaya Sai Baba,
Abhayapradaya Shirdi Baba,
Jivadar Shri Sai Baba,
Jivadar Shri Sai Baba,
Sesha Sai Shri Sai Baba, Lakshmi Narayan Shri Sai Baba.
Om Sai Baba, Shri Sai Baba, Jai Sai Baba, Shirdi Sai Baba.
Sachitananda Guru, Brahmananda Guru, Nityananda Guru, Sai Ram. Shri Sai Ram, Shri Sai Ram.
dear listener, Sai Ram and welcome to Tryst with Divinity, our series of conversations with people who have been touched by the love of Bhagwan Baba. Today we bring you the first part of the conversation with Dr. V. Mohan, an eminent Indian diabetologist from Chennai, South India. He is the chairman and chief of diabetology at Dr. Mohan's Diabetes Specialities Center. This institution, based in Chennai, is a World Health Organization collaborating center for prevention and control of non-communicable diseases and also an International Diabetes Federation center of education. Additionally, Dr. Mohan is the president and director of the Madras Diabetes Research Foundation. This research foundation, which Dr. Mohan established in 1996, has published more than 800 papers, including over 500 original research articles in peer-reviewed journals, as well as at least 120 chapters in the textbooks on diabetes, endocrinology, and internal medicine. Dr. Mohan, over the years, has received numerous awards and fellowships. In 2012, the Government of India conferred on him one of the highest civilian awards, Padma Shri, for his yeoman contribution in the field of diabetes treatment and research in India. In 2013, he was awarded fellowship from American College of Physicians, USA, as well as from American College of Endocrinology, USA. In the same year, he was also conferred fellowship from the World Academy of Sciences for the advancement of science in developing countries. One can visit his website, drmohan.com, that is drmohan.com, to know more about him. What is significant is, in 1992, he was drawn to the Sai fold, and since then, he has had many incredible moments of experiencing the divine in his life at various levels. Bhagwan very graciously blessed him to be the convener of the Sri Satya Sai Trust, Tamil Nadu, in 2007. Besides discharging his responsibility, he is also very active in conducting free rural diabetes screening camps in several villages of Tamil Nadu. Radio Sai's Bishu Prishti had a conversation with him in November 2013, in which he began with sharing Swami's instructions about diabetes management and then moved on to his journey to Swami and the precious lessons he had learned at his lotus feet. So here is the first part of this conversation. Sai Ram, Dr. Mohan, and a warm welcome to you to the studios of Radio Sai. World over, people know you as someone who has worked tirelessly in the area of diabetes for more than 3 decades, and they know you as the chairman and chief diabetologist of Dr. Mohan's group of diabetic institutions present in India and abroad. But for all of us Sai devotees, you are a Sai doctor, you are the convener of Bhagwan's Trust, Sri Satya Sai Trust, Tamil Nadu. So it would be really very useful for us to know what are Bhagwan's directions on diabetes, diabetes management, control, prevention, that perhaps you might have received directly from Swami.
I'm very privileged to answer this question, because in one of the rare interviews that I've had with Swami, and I treasure it very much till today, the interview was going on and suddenly he turned to me and he said, "Doctor, why is diabetes increasing in India?" So at that time, we had made a small breakthrough in one of our genetics research. So I thought he is referring to some new genetic discovery. So I said, "Is it genes, Swami?" So he frowned at me and he said, no, not genes, something else. So I said, "People are not walking nowadays, Swami, lack of exercise." "Yes, that is correct. But there is something else which you have not looked at in your own research, and that is why I am asking you," he said. So I said, "Swami, I don't know." Then he said, "Rice, white rice is one of the reasons why sugar is increasing." And then he turned around to the others and said, "You know, this white rice is polished. And so when you take lots of it up, people are taking too much of this white rice. So it increases the sugar level. When it increases the sugar level, the insulin goes up. Then all the insulin from the pancreas goes away. Then they become diabetic. Then the sugar goes up. So this is the main reason." And he told me, "Your data, you have got it. Go and look at it," he said. "And if you substitute it with either brown rice or ragi," then he told me, "I take sangatti, you know that ragi bought, I take that. Sugar doesn't go up," he said. "Go and look at it," he said. So I went back to my database and I said, see, Swami has said like this, let's take out. We had collected all the data, but we didn't even think about it.
Mm-hmm.
When we looked at it, we were amazed that there was a direct correlation between the prevalence of diabetes in Chennai and the amount of carbohydrate, that is white rice, which is consumed. So if you took 200 grams of carbohydrate, you had a certain percentage of diabetes. Those who took 400 grams of carbohydrate, just 200 grams more, the diabetes prevalence went up 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
And this is after correcting for obesity and all other physical activity and everything else. So for the first time, we are able to show that white rice is directly linked to it. And this directly came from Swami. It was published in the British Journal of Nutrition. Then we went ahead and substituted this white rice with brown rice. And lo and behold, the sugar levels came down.
Wow.
So Swami gave very clear instructions. He said, cut down on the rice. If possible, change it or change the type of rice to less polished rice. Take either wheat or ragi. It is better, less slowly absorbed than this white rice. Take plenty of vegetables. And then you have to walk every day. Physical activity is very important. Exercise is very important. And most of all, reduce your tension. Stress. Of course, Swami in another context said, hari, vari, kari, he has said. In fact, when he said that, I told him, hari, vari, kari. But he said, that is for heart disease, he said.
Yes.
For heart disease, you will vari, kari, hari. But part of it also relates to diabetes, because hari and vari, hari becomes, you become a type A personality, always trying to do something. So all your hormones get increased. So Swami has very clearly showed that. And reduction of stress, Swami has given so much of importance to pranayama. The breathing, how you do. So the slow, deep inhalation and exhalation. Soham, soham. So the breathing that you do, pranayama, and yoga and meditation helps to calm you. So that brings down the diabetes and the blood pressure. So Swami has in several places given clear instructions. And also within the vegetables, which ones to take, which ones not to take. In the Sai literature, it is there. In fact, there's a book on food and Swami. They've actually compiled everything. So sattvic food, generally.
If you can spend little time and tell listeners about this, you know, the kind of food that they should take.
Yes. So basically what he says is cut down on the starchy vegetables and fruit. For example, rice, potato, beetroot. These are all starchy vegetables. So those things have to be avoided. Lot of green leafy vegetables, whether it is beans or greens or spinach or cabbage or cauliflower. All these are vegetables which are very, very good. So all the green leafy vegetables, those which are under the ground are usually more starchy. Those which are above the ground are good. So the way Swami has said is that take less of rice. When you take a plate, what we do, first of all, we put all the rice. Then only side dishes, we put something else. What Swami's concept is, you first put a lot of vegetables on the plate.
Okay.
And then take a lot of these grams, pulses. Papu will always say, a lot of grams and pulses. It's very rich in protein. In fact, Swami has written clearly in his book for vegetarians. World over, people are afraid that if you become vegetarian, you will become thin, your muscles will go, you will become a weakling and so on. Swami says, no. There is enough vegetable protein available, either in the form of milk or in the form of dals and all the protein and the sprouts and the grams. And if you include all that, plenty of the tofu, soya bean, Bengal gram, green gram, black gram, all these are very, very rich sources of protein.
But
and they are high-class protein.
They say there are some kind of protein which are there in non-veg food that you cannot get in veg food. What is your
there
take
is,
on that?
There is, scientifically it is correct, because if you look at the essential amino acids, if you see, in rice, for example, lysine is absent, okay? But there is excess of methionine. If you use the pulses, methionine is absent, but lysine is more. So Swami says very clearly, eat them together. So when you combine the rice and the grams together, excess of one is made up by the other. So if one is having less of lysine, it is there in the grams. If one is having less of methionine, it is there in the other. So if you combine both together, it becomes first class quality protein of the best biological value, equal to any animal protein. It's only when you eat it in isolation. Suppose you take only the rice and you cut out all that. Naturally, you will not only be deficient in protein, you will be deficient in some other types of protein also. I don't think if you actually choose it properly and use it properly, you get the same essential amino acid composition as non-vegetarian food. And I don't think it is right to say that vegetarians will be deficient in this or the other. Sometimes it can be a little deficiency of B12. And B12 you can always supplement, either in a capsule form or B12 comes in other thing. So you can always substitute, in some of the nuts there is B12, some of the seeds there is B12, flax seeds and so on. So there are other ways in which you can get that.
Wonderful. So as you are saying this, what comes to me is, you know, there is so much of correlation between spirituality, being a side devotee and diabetes.
Absolutely. I think they are both intertwined and you cannot separate one from the other.
Yeah, I think if you are a devotee, it will help you to become healthy also.
Definitely. Because Swami's principles, he says a healthy body only can have a healthy mind first. Because he says the body is a temple of the mind. So if the temple itself is polluted or it is unhealthy, how the mind can be pure? So first you must look after the body. That's why Swami always says, give lot of importance to your body's needs also. Because unless the body is strong, how can you serve others? Swami himself said that hands that help are holier than lips that pray. If your hands are weak, how can you serve? So for that, I think Swami gives lot of importance to nutrition, to rest, to sleep. In the ashram, 9 o'clock lights out. Why? You can keep on working up to 1 o'clock in the morning. The next day you can't do your work. So that is why Swami, I think from the beginning, has trained all Sai devotees to have a disciplined life. Eat in time, have enough time with the family, have positive thoughts always, not negative thoughts, get enough sleep, all these things, and then eat nutritious food, and anything in excess is bad. Swami talks about the 5 white poisons, no? White rice, sugar, salt, maida, and even milk in excess. Even milk in excess is bad. You can have a glass of milk to get some calcium and some protein. But you have 10 glasses of milk, that milk is meant for the calf, not for human beings. So if you drink too much of milk, certain cancers are linked to that. If you take salt, blood pressure. So you can limit your salt intake. Because if you take too much salt, blood pressure. If you take too much of sugar, it leads to diabetes. And similarly, maida and so on. So the 5 white poisons which Swami says, if we avoid it or take it in moderation, I think they take care of our health.
And if you look at India today, they say there are 6.3 crore people in India who are afflicted with this disease. And if you look at the list of countries, we come only next to China.
Second.
It's a very depressing situation. But more and more what we see is youngsters are getting afflicted with this disease.
Yes.
So can you please share, you know, what we can do so that, you know, at least Sai youth, Sai youngsters are healthy. You know, what is it that they should bring the shift in their lifestyle so that, you know, they're strong enough to do Bhagwan's work, to find fulfillment in their lives?
I can see you have done your homework very well. But the number is, unfortunately, that 6.3 crores or 63 million was last year. This year's figures have just been released on November 14th, World Diabetes Day this year.
Yes.
And it's going to be officially released on December 1st in Melbourne at the World Congress, where I'll also be there. The official release. But the figures are already out. It's 65 million now.
65 million.
So it's 6.5 crore people now in India. China has also moved up a little bit, but we are still in second place, very much ahead of the third country, which is US, which is only 2.4 crore people. We are 3 times that of US. So the problem, you hit the nail on the head. See, it's not just having diabetes. Many years ago, diabetes is considered a status symbol. So people used to say, I've got my Mercedes-Benz, now I have to get little diabetes to be accepted as a big man in society, you know. Today, all that has changed because it is moving from the rich to the middle class to the poor. A poor man, if he gets diabetes, almost 25% of his income he has to spend on that one disease. So 25% of his income is gone just to buy his medicines. So he can't afford it. So what he's going to do is he's going to neglect his diabetes completely. Okay. Second problem, as you rightly said, it used to be a disease of older people. So 50, 60, 70 years you get it. Takes another 20 years to get complications. So 90 years if you get complications, India's lifespan is only 65 years. So we don't have to worry too much about 95-year-old person, whether he may get complications or not. If we all live up to that, that result is a blessing. But from there it started coming to 40s, 30s, 20s. Today, 12-year-old, 13-year-old children are coming. I'm not talking about the insulin-dependent type 1. That comes separately anyway. But that's not a common thing. It's not increase in epidemic proportion. But the usual adult onset is now coming because of obesity, childhood obesity. And we as Sai devotees, what we have to do is encourage every one of our youth as well as the children in all our Sai schools. I think physical activity must be given a lot of importance. Second, the reason why this obesity is coming, and that obesity is leading to diabetes, is junk food.
Mm-hmm.
People are eating all kinds of junk food. Instead of drinking water, they're drinking cola. They think it's more fashionable to drink that, you know. In fact, abroad, sometimes mineral water will be costlier than the cola. They make it in, you know, cans and this, and in a machine, fountain machine, you can go and take the thing almost for free. So everybody starts drinking that. Calorie content goes up. In a small cola, you have 12 cubes of sugar. Can you imagine? A small cola. So if you take that 5 times a day, 60 cubes of sugar you have taken. And you multiply that 365, you are talking about thousands and thousands of cubes of sugar. So these are not small things. When you drink water, clean water, it is zero calories. So in our SSS VIP villages where we work, I think providing clean drinking water, telling our villagers, telling wherever we work, the Sai organization, drink water. I think that's a very, very healthy thing that we can tell. And that's why Swami has given drinking water to everyone. If you link it to his project, somehow it will come, you know. Because he believed that water is essential for life. And without that, that is why the Sai Water Project is a landmark in the whole world. Nobody, no organization, no single individual in the history of mankind has supplied millions of people with drinking water.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, when we talk about Bhagwan's healthcare mission,
yes,
we talk about Bhagwan's hospitals,
yes,
and free clinics elsewhere. But other day, this thought came that we don't talk about Bhagwan's water project when we talk about healthcare.
Exactly.
But actually, it is so linked.
They're linked. Because if you give clean water, they won't get infection, they won't get diarrhea, children won't die, your lifespan will increase. See, many of India's children die before 5 years of age. If you see the under 5's deaths, India is doing very badly. It's improving. Many states have improved. The southern states at least now are much better. But the northern states, some are in a very pitiable condition. If those children make it beyond 5 years, then they're okay. They live their normal life. Then they go to 30, 40, 50 years like a normal person. But what do they die when they're 2 years old due to a diarrhea? That is where water comes in. That is why Swami has been so very kind and merciful in giving water to water-starved places where they were drinking water which is undrinkable, you know. Many of the places it's polluted. Many of the places they have toxins, in arsenic in the water, fluoride in the water, very high contents and so on. So Swami, with His infinite mercy and His love, divine love, limitless love, has provided drinking water to, and that is so closely related to health. So I don't think you can actually separate it. And education. Education only gives you the basis for all this. That is why the education is also, so all the three are like a triangle. One
Absolutely.
Fits into the other.
And when you talk about education, I was just reminded of reading that same report. It says that 50% of people with diabetes, according to International Diabetic Federation, do not know that they have the disease.
That is a problem. So that is why, again, if you go back to Swami's mobile hospital, see, everywhere there is a link. What are they doing? They're going and advising people, raising awareness, not specifically about diabetes, but specifically about health and so on. But today, as the communicable diseases are getting controlled to some extent, TB started coming down, HIV is thankfully almost gone, other diseases are coming down, many are preventable. So once you control all that, today if you think of what are the things due to which people are dying in India, already 60% of all deaths in India are due to non-communicable diseases, which includes diabetes, hypertension, heart disease and cancer as the four major causes of death. Only after that then there's injuries, another 10-15%. Only after that communicable diseases are coming. So while communicable diseases are still important in areas where we still have many of the backward states, still people are dying due to tuberculosis or malaria, or so those kind of things still have to be looked into, they will also improve. In the next 5 to 10 years, they'll catch up with the rest of, just like we are catching up with the West, the rural will catch up with the urban, the North, now the South has become a little more advanced, so North will catch up with the South, and some of the backward states, Northeast will catch up with the rest of India. It's all going to happen. It's a question of 5 years, 10 years. Then ultimately we'll be stuck with this problem,
yes,
you know, of non-communicable diseases. So for that, right now healthy messages have to start. And I think in our Sai organization, we're already doing it. We're doing camps, we're doing mobile hospitals, we're trying to extend that to the whole country. These health messages, so one of the things which leads to this affluence.
Yes.
So one of my reviewers of a paper, you know, from a British journal, humorously the reviewer wrote to me, okay, you're showing that at that time, 10, 15 years, no longer true, now it's caught up. But 15 years ago when I published one of the reports in Chennai, the poor people had very little diabetes, the middle class had more. So the reviewer humorously wrote, so is your solution to make everyone poor in India? So they won't get diabetes. Because when they become rich, they're going to get diabetes. So what are you going to do? I said, no. I wrote back, no. Our aim is to educate the rich man and the middle man so that his diabetes won't come, you know. Yeah. That is what we should do.
So they say diabetes is a disease of development, and if you want to develop, if you want to increase your standard of living, then you have to get the disease.
Partly true, partly not true. Partly true if you don't take the corrective measures, because what happens with development is you eat more, your exercise will come down. See, a guy who's going on a cycle or walking, now buys a scooter, his exercise totally gone. Otherwise, he used to walk 4 kilometers. If you take the villages around Puttaparthi now, Compare it to what it was 30, 40 years ago. Now I'm sure every house there will have a motorbike, it'll have a television, it'll have this, it'll have that. All the developments you can see happening there. All that leads to a decrease in physical activity, increase in tension and stress, because now you're trying to meet American deadlines, trying to meet the youngsters are trying to work in, all these back offices, trying to BPOs and trying to work to American time. So stress level, your sleep goes. And then when they sit there, what do? They'll be ordering in a pizza or a burger or drinking cola, and that's what they're doing. So all these are leading to diabetes. Not the development which has occurred. The wrong habits which came because of the development. As a side devotee, if we teach them, you do all that. Yes. You earn more. Yes. But also see that you keep 1 hour for exercise every day.
Yes.
Eat healthy home food.
Yes.
Have all those things only occasionally.
Yes.
Don't change your whole lifestyle and think this is your new style. Now that I become a corporate person, this is how I do. Not necessary. You can still take your usual home food. Once in a week, go out and have something. Or once in a month, go out and have something. So once those messages we build in, along with our Sai messages, when you go to SSV villages and so on, if we start bringing in these messages, we'll have a healthier India. Some people may ask, is that our priority? You know, we have got so much of other work to do. Shouldn't we be teaching them how to wash your hands? Well, teach that also. We are not saying don't teach that, you know. Yeah. Wash your hands 5 times a day. Use soap and water, okay. Keep yourself clean. Wash your hands after you come back from work. Wash your hands before you think. Teach children to do that. Teach them hygiene. Teach them all that you teach, okay. Along with it, also teach them exercise. Yeah. Teach them some yoga. Teach them stress reduction. Today, with development, another thing is happening is suicide rates are going up. Children can't face the competition, you know. When you need 99.8% marks to get into a medical college today, how many can reach that? Become 99, you're a failure, you know. So children who have studied, they don't have money to pay to a private college, to a private medical college, engineering college, they don't have money. They have to get into the government system. And there into the government system, when you say 99.8% is your cut point, 99.6 is a failure then. You know, so in Swami's institutions, there is no first and second. We know that. Everybody is first.
Yes.
So you should not get to think about marks, but about remarks. That's what Swami says. So everywhere, Swami has given those messages that is more important to be first in life, not first in the examination. So how do we prepare them for that wholesome education? And that is where I think Swami's Swarna Yuga concept comes in. Yes. Because Swami has said that Swarna Yuga will come, that India will be a world leader, that the world itself will be harmonious, that the universal brotherhood is going to come. All that he has said. How is it going to come? Not through old people like us, you know, who have already passed through the generation, but from youngsters. And where are those youngsters coming? We have got 100 Sai schools. These Sai schools are producing 50,000 school children who are taught ideals of Swami, okay, who are different. They are our hope for the future. Now, when these people come out, when they have a good education, they are going to come up in life. They are going to become collectors. They are going to become, bureaucrats. They are going to become doctors, lawyers, and so on. They are going to follow ethical principles in life as taught by Swami and his institutions. That is the future. That is the Swarna Yuga which is going to come. It is so much deteriorated today that a sea change has to come. And that is why Swami has given so much of importance to his students. He always says, my students come first. Sometimes we used to feel jealous. He always says, his students only come first. He has given so much importance. Now we understand why he is giving so much of importance to them. Because he sees them as his ambassadors who are going to carry his messages into the next generation. And they are the people who are going to change India, change the world. Okay? Today, when one of Swami's students goes for employment anywhere, let it be a multinational company anywhere, the moment they see Satya Sai Institution, they grab them. Because they know they will not be corrupt, they will be ethical, they will do what is the best. Because that is how they have been taught to do. That itself is a great thing, isn't it? So I think that is where integration of all these values, education, human values that Swami has taught, which has come through all his schools and the children and the succeeding generations which are going to come, that is a hope for India. And that is a hope for the world.
But as you mentioned about being ethical in society, you know, this question comes to me because this is something that we have faced whenever we speak to youngsters, you know, especially whenever anyone tells them that, you know, when you go out in society, you have to be ethical, you have to follow these principles. You know, people listen, youngsters listen, but they say, you know, it's not really going to be so practical. The world outside is so different. You can't really make it big if you want to strictly follow all these principles. You know, some things are good only for the books.
Yeah.
Now, What is your take on that? You have been so successful in your life. You've received Padma Shri from the president's hands. What would you like to say to this generation? Can you share something that you have experienced in your life from your own personal experience?
Yeah, I'll give you an example. Partly their fears are justified. Because, you know, Swami says, he himself says, you come to Prashanthi Nilayam, you're here for a week, it's a different world. So, you have so many ideals you think about. It's like a New Year resolutions, okay? You do everything. Yes. Then you step out onto that bus outside. And the moment you get in, you meet the, you see the world is different. You know, the whole world is different. So, the world out there is a little different. But that doesn't mean that we should not try and that we should give up and that nothing is possible, okay? We have to persist with what you think is right. And, in fact, there is a book now called The Difficulty in Being Good by Guru Charan Das.
Yes.
So, he just takes, you know, from Mahabharata, from Ramayana, and he says, everybody who has tried to do good has been in trouble. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because it's not only now. For generations, it has been, for eons, it has been like that. That somebody tries to do good, and he'll get into trouble. Okay. Sita did all that she could, but still she was suspected in the end. Was she really faithful? You know. So, somebody who does good, it's very difficult for them to persist. And that is where the challenge is. Swami says they're all tests for you. You know. And each test you pass, you come higher and higher in how I assess you. And if you're going to get something very easily, it's not worth getting that degree at all. Okay. So those are the tests in life where we have to take a call. So we stepped out of Tamil Nadu and came to Hyderabad and set up our branch there. So initially we were doing very badly and very slowly it was becoming different. They don't know us as well as in Tamil Nadu. It was the first foray into another state, Andhra Pradesh, and the culture there was slightly different. Okay,
another institution of Dr.
Branches. Yeah, one of our 16 branches. Now we have 16, and the first one is in Muscat, just coming up with Swami's grace. But outside Tamil Nadu, the first one was in Hyderabad. So we started this. So we had a training program. Okay. So this training program is purely voluntary. The doctors come in over a period of few days, train them in diabetes. They don't pay anything. It's free. And I'm offering all that I have learned to them as and these are private practitioners. They're not even diabetologists. They're general practitioners who do lots of other things and they have diabetes. So after everything was over, after certificate is also given to them, they've been trained and everything that we had to teach them, we have taught them and all. Then they're going to go back and do general practice even then. I just made a casual comment saying that now that I've taught you, you'll be able to treat diabetes well, but you might have some difficult case which you're not able to handle. And if anything is there, we are always there at your service. Okay, I didn't even solicit, I didn't even say refer to us. I just said, if you need any help, we are always there. If some high-end equipment, somebody has some eye problem, kidney problem, something like that, you can refer to us. You know, if you want to. It's up to you if you want to refer. Straight away, the doctors are telling me, after getting everything from me, free of cost, okay, and getting the, you know, benefit of being educated and all the material given to them, everything given free of cost for weeks together, all the knowledge being imparted, they tell me directly, how much kickback will you give us?
Oh,
so,
my God.
For a moment, I was taken aback and I said, what? They said the going rate is 20% in Hyderabad. So, if you give us anything more, 25, 30, we will refer to you. So, I said, I'm sorry, we have never done it in our life and I won't be able to give you any kickback at all because I have not done this so far and I don't think I can do it because, first of all, our rules don't permit it and my ethics don't permit it. I'm a side devotee, I can't do it. And the way our institution works, we have never done like that. So, I will not be able to give any kickbacks to you. And they said, we will not refer a single patient to you. I said, so be it, you know, I'm willing to close down the Hyderabad center, okay, if necessary, but I will not give you kickbacks in order to work. So, it almost came to a crisis, and I came here and I prayed to Swami and so on, and I remember it was in December of 1 year, it's 2.5 years had passed, I was going in loss, and I called my Hyderabad person, Dr. Shastri, who now works with me for 24 years now, and he worked with me the first 14, 15 years, then only I sent him to Hyderabad. Now he's been there about 8 years now. So I called him and I said, shall we consider, I mean, we'll give it another 2-3 months time, obviously. And if it's not, it's still going loss, how long keep going loss? Why don't you come back to Chennai? I mean, we'll continue. Chennai is doing well, we'll come back to Chennai. He said, sir, whatever you decide, we will do that. But no giving kickbacks, okay? We will not do that. If necessary, we'll close down the center. Miraculously, this is a pure miracle of Swami. And that's where, see, he's been testing. Will he do it? Will he not do it? That's where the test comes. So, after that, from January, a sudden influx of patients. You know, I don't know from where suddenly it came, and the rest is history. Hyderabad became one of our good branches.
Wow.
It's one of our success stories now. You know, what happened between January and December and January? Nothing. We did nothing special. We did no advertising. We did no kickbacks. We did nothing. We continued as is, where is. Suddenly it changed. Suddenly the divine grace came. Okay, it must have been a test saying, will they give in to this or not give in to this? And when we said no and surrendered to Swami, he then took over and then he made it a success. So I think if you stick to your principles, in the short term you may lose something, but in the long term, what you get out of it, the respect you get out of it, people will come to you. After all, everybody is looking for a change in India, isn't it? People are looking for, people are fed up.
Yes.
With everybody being corrupt and so on. So if they see somebody who is, of course in the short term they will be, not only in the short term, even in the long term you'll have a problem. Because if you are trying to do good in society, everybody including avatars who have tried to do good have been criticized. You know? So unnecessarily for nothing that they have done, people criticize. That is human nature. But ultimately, as Swami says, truth will prevail. Ultimately goodness will prevail. No, there will be no instance in history where only evil prevailed. You take the entire Puranas and everything. Ultimately, the good only prevailed. But look at all the good that people tried to do. Yudhishthira. You take anybody. You know, they would have gone through so much of suffering, you know. And the most purest man gambles, loses. Why should he gamble? Why should he lose? He's meant to do that. He's meant to go through that suffering, you know. And then he's meant to go through that purification process. So that is how I think we'll have to. So I would tell youngsters, don't worry. Stick to your principles. Do what you think is right. If one door closes, another door will open. It cannot be that the whole of history is wrong. That the whole of all the teachings that Swami has taught us, the various avatars in the past have taught us, are all wrong. So if you stick to what you believe is correct, and you stick to that, you will be able to do that. I'm not saying that little bit of here and there, it may not be there. You might have to please somebody. You might, in life, you have to. For example, whatever we think we cannot tell, no? In life?
Yes.
Truthful. So now, right now, I think something bad about you. Can I say it straight away? You cannot. So certain things you have to play in diplomacy. Lately the talk may go away. So life is like that. I think we have to go along. We cannot go along one straight path like that. There could be things. But by and large, stick to the principles and pray. That's the other thing I would say. When you have a difficult situation, surrender. Surrender to Swami and say, that's it. I can't do anything. And I'd like to talk about one or two medical miracles which have happened like that.
Sure,
ethical
sir.
Miracles are there. There are also medical miracles which happen.
Really, it would be very nice if you can share about how you are able to feel Bhagwan's presence actually in your profession. In the practice. Because, you know, as you mentioned, ultimately truth will prevail.
Yeah.
But if you look at Mahabharata or any other instance also, what is also true is, during this entire test, God is with...
He's with you.
He's with you, actually.
With you, yeah.
In the Mahabharata, it was so obvious. Krishna
yes.
was with the Pandavas.
Yes.
I think if you look at all this history also,
yeah.
God was always with them.
Yes.
So, it's only a question of we feeling the presence.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
If you can share, yeah, how yeah. you've been able to
so,
feel this presence.
So, in the profession, see, we treat as a normal doctor. If somebody came to me as a patient, I will normally treat, as a patient, and I will continue to treat. So after praying to Swami, every single morning, we pray to Swami that, give me the courage, give me the wisdom to do what is right and help my patients, and I'm only an instrument, and through me, you treat, you heal. I'm only doing the external thing of giving a medicine or giving an advice. It's you who is healing. So that, of course, every single day it goes. At the end of the day, we thank him for all that he has done. That goes without saying. But sometimes, the best of doctors are stumped. They just don't know what to do. I've told this in front of Swami in 2008 in a speech, but I'd like to just repeat it here. There was a Muslim gentleman who came, and he had undergone a surgery, a small anal surgery he had undergone, and he had a very low pain threshold. He cannot stand any pain, the least of pain, and this is a very painful area. So he had been undergone a surgery there, and the first night after that operation, he didn't sleep at all. He had intense pain. So finally we had to give him Fortwin, and then Pethidine. These are the narcotic drugs which you normally give as a last resort. I gave him that also.
Painkillers.
Painkillers. Narcotic painkillers they're called. Okay. If you give them for long enough, they get addicted to that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave it to him. I said, you know, he needs a pain. He's shouting with pain. We gave him that. He didn't sleep. The whole night with that also, he didn't sleep. So next evening, I'd gone somewhere. Then I knew this man is, in trouble. So I went back to do rounds. Around 8:30 in the night, I went back to do rounds. And the moment I went to his room, he caught my hand.
And he said, doctor, do something. I'm having pain, do something. So I said, look, I have given you, you know, yesterday the strongest of medicines I've given you. There's nothing stronger than that, that I can think of, you know, for pain. So I'll probably repeat it today. No. You must do something for me, you know, relieve the pain. I don't care what you do. I cannot go through one more night of pain. I'm suffering, doctor. I'm suffering. Pain. So my heart melted. I don't know what to do. I told him, close your eyes. He closed his eyes and he was sitting on the bed. So I have this ring, Swami's ring. So I just prayed to Swami and put the ring on his head and said, I just silent prayer to Swami. I said, Swami, I don't know what to do, you know. This fellow, I've given him everything and I'm just not able to, you know, control his pain. You are all merciful, you are all loving, and this man needs his help. So I'm praying to you to relieve him of his pain. Irrespective of what medicine I give, I don't think that's going to have the thing. It is you who is going to, you know, relieve his pain. I pray to you for this pain and I surrender at your lotus feet because I can't. That's it. As a doctor, I'm stumped. Now I surrender to you.
You just heard the first part of the conversation with Dr. V. Mohan, an eminent Indian diabetologist from Chennai, South India. He is the chairman and chief of diabetology at Dr. Mohan's Diabetes Speciality Center. This institution, based in Chennai, is a World Health Organization collaborating center for prevention and control of non-communicable diseases and also an International Diabetes Federation center of education. Dr. V. Mohan is also the convener of the Sri Sathya Sai Trust, Tamil Nadu, since November 2007. In the second part of this conversation, Dr. Mohan goes on to share some amazing instances where he palpably felt Swami's presence in his professional life and also then deliberates on how he happened to cultivate so much faith in the divine. In conversation with him was Radio Sai's Bishu Prushti, and this was recorded in November 2013. If you have any queries or comments, please write to listener@radiosai.org. Thank you and Sai Ram.
Soham, soham, dhyan karo.
Mama.
हृदय भरो ब्रह्मानंद से हृदय भरो करो
सोहम सोहम ध्यान करो
सद्गुरु साई ध्यान करो
सद्गुरु साई ध्यान करो
सोहम सोहम ध्यान करो सोहम ब्रह्मा सोहम विष्णु
सोहम ब्रह्मा सोहम विष्णु
सोहम साई ध्यान करो
सोहम साई ध्यान करो
सोहम आत्मा शिव परमात्मा सद्गुरु ब्रह्म सनातन हे सद्गुरु ब्रह्म सनातन हे दयाघन पावन हे परम दयाघन पावन हे जन्म ज दुख विनाशन हे जन्म ज दुख विनाशन हे जगदोद्धारण कारण सनातन हे दुख विनाशन हे। सनातन है